Today on Vox Talks Economics, markets for nature. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics, coming to you from the First Hoffman Center CEPR Recipe Conference at the Geneva Graduate Institute. My name is Tim Phillips. Our economy depends on nature, but nature is in danger. The Global South in particular needs external funding to protect its ecosystems. Now, markets can help, but the way they currently operate has low public trust, and recent news suggests that that lack of trust may be justified. Estelle Cantillon of Université Libre de Bruxelles and CEPR is co-author of a chapter in CEPR's Paris report proposing a new market mechanism to channel funds to nature-based projects. It's a bold idea, so I asked Estelle to explain how it works. Estelle, we are usually discussing carbon markets. But why are we also considering nature-based markets?
So first of all, like when we talk about carbon markets here in this context, but we're talking about the voluntary carbon market. And the notion of nature-based markets is really an extension of that concept. It's the idea that we recognize the services that nature provides, and it goes beyond sequestering carbon. And we talk about markets because we think that, I mean, of course, I could compensate you for the ecosystemic services you provide. But when we think about markets, the idea is that we want somehow to enlarge the scope, making it bigger. So that's nature-based market.
As you say, we do have this system of voluntary carbon markets at the moment.
Yeah.
How well is that working?
So let me first say what they do. Okay. So the idea of the current credit voluntary carbon markets, the way they work is that you've got a project that either avoids emitting carbon or removes carbon from the atmosphere. So think about you planting trees that removes carbon from the atmosphere, you switching from cooking with wood to cooking with solar or some other sources of energy that's avoiding emissions. And so you've got this project and we're going to put a bunch of conditions on them. And I'll come back to them in a second. And the idea is that we're going to emit a credit to recognize that emissions avoidance or that emissions removal, and somebody's going to buy it. Now, what are the conditions to make sure that these emissions have been indeed avoided or indeed the carbon has been removed? We're going to make sure that it's additional. Without the money, this would not have happened. That we are really clear about the difference that's called baseline accuracy. We are accurate about measuring that difference. We are going to make sure that it's permanent, the removal of the avoidance. You know, there's a bunch of conditions of that kind. The issue that's been leading to the collapse of that market, mostly, is that there's been documentation that a lot of these conditions have not been met by that market.
Study after study has indicated that most offsets available on the market don't reliably reduce emissions.
The problem here is that carbon offsets are essentially IOUs to the atmosphere. But the atmosphere has no power to collect those IOUs. There's no atmosphere enforcement agency.
I also do believe the offset market is rife with fraud. I have no doubt about that. I've heard that from investors. I've heard that from purchasers.
If the idea that you can simply invest a little money and make your carbon footprint disappear sounds too good to be true, that's because it absolutely is.
If that is the problem, if that problem is measurement and governance, can that easily be fixed?
Some of them, yes. And we need to recognize that there's been efforts by the industry, but also by governments to try and, you know, put in place better standards, higher standards, better measurements, so on. But there's two things that the current efforts will not do. The first one is that if the carbon removal or the emissions avoidance is coming from nature, because a cook stove, that's a technology-based carbon avoidance scheme. So if it comes from nature, nature is not permanent. There can be a wildfire that destroys your forest that actually absorbed carbon. So the impermanence is really a big issue, because if I give you a credit because you planted trees and then, you know, there's a fire that destroyed your forest, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, and no governance, no better technology will solve it. The second thing that the current efforts will not address is the issue of high transaction costs. So today, when you buy credit in that market, there's about 40% that stays in the hands of various intermediaries that don't go to the project that you want to do. So these are things that are in some ways structural.
You can find out more about using markets to restore nature in the first episode we recorded at this conference, a conversation with Beatrice Veda Di Mauro called Coalitions of the Willing, which we published on 29th of October this year. Subscribe to Vox Talks Economics for all our back episodes, wherever you get your podcasts.
Does this mean that the way you're thinking about nature-based markets does not follow this model?
Yes, and that's basically the point that we make in our paper. So what we say is that we need to think differently about, in some ways, the way the market has been developed so far. It was a copycat of emission trading schemes, but it's not the right way, we argue, to think about it. So what we propose is, instead of thinking about credits, which are very transactional, I buy a credit from you, and the next time I buy a credit from another project, we've introduced the concept of nature shares. So I'm investing in a project, I'm buying shares, and the shares themselves give me a right to carbon and biodiversity dividends. But at least I'm in a long-term relationship now with you.
Okay, so you're buying shares, but if I'm buying a share, what am I buying a share of?
And it's very important also. By the way, the proposal we've developed is in the context of increasing finance to the global south. And that's important, and you'll see why. I'm buying the share in a project. I'm not buying land. That's important. Mm-hmm. Buying the share in a project that's going to be restoring forests, restoring land, conserving. And that project is going to be responsible for this land management. We're going to measure the natural benefits, the carbon benefits, and every year we can release some of these benefits in terms of dividends. We're going to do it prudently, and that's exactly why we're thinking about shares. Shares is an equity. So when a company makes a profit, they don't distribute all of 100% of their profits to their shareholders. They're keeping some because, you know, something can happen. Imagine you've absorbed 100 tons of carbon. You're not going to distribute 100 tons of carbon as dividend. You're going to say, well, the climate is changing. There might be a fire. There might be some pests. There might be a drought that, you know, whatever is going to impact my forest, I'm going to release only 60, you know, and whether it's 60, 50 or 40, it will depend on climate modeling, you know, and proper science in some ways.
So who's creating these projects in which I am buying a share?
On the supply side, and it's an important question, it's jurisdictions mostly. So jurisdictions are large regions that are aligned with the local governance. They might actually be gathering, putting together a lot of different farmers, but the person who's contracting is the jurisdiction. And the reason we have that, it's so it's a public entity that's also responsible for some of the rules and regulations. So that's one of the benefits. It's also aggregating a lot of different projects, so reducing the risks of this project. It could be a fire in one place, not a fire in the other place. And so the critical element of our proposal is to think about shares, so equity, and a lot of these other decisions about the design of this market are just following naturally from it. Because when you think about equity, now there's some risk, okay? So I'm investing in your project in long term. You know, I may worry about what economists called moral hazard and something. Now I'm contracting with a public entity that's just going to sponsor these things. So that's reducing the moral hazard aspect. The fact that we have jurisdictions, it's a larger pool. It's reducing risk. It's reducing leakage, which is one of the problems of the existing. So it's solving a lot of the other problems at the same time. But it all derives from the idea that we now have shares.
And do you envisage a platform on which these shares are traded?
Okay, so that's indeed the other thing is that, like, who's going to buy them and how? So when you think about equity, there's always two things, right? You need to have a primary market. First time you are releasing this equity, you need to have a primary market, and then you need to figure out how to organize a secondary market, because if people invest, of course, they're in that relationship for the long term, but their circumstances can change and sometimes they may want to sell them. And so you need to make sure that this happens. So in terms of the primary market, the way we think about this is that on the supply side, you would have the jurisdictions proposing restoration, nature restorations projects. And they will actually say, you know, I want to restore this area. This will be all of the characteristics of my projects, including how I'm involving the local community, what is my land management plans, and how much I need to do this. And on the demand side, people will be bidding for how much they're willing to buy. And then it's supply and demand that will set the price for these projects and which projects will be funded. And it's a little bit more technical on the secondary market, but basically we're going to use the information about how people arbitrage between the different dimensions of projects in the primary market to organize a liquid secondary market.
I see. So you are envisaging that people can sell their shares as well as buy them.
It's not the primary goal.
But
right?
It's possible.
But it's possible and it's important. Once you create equity, I mean, you do need to make sure that people are not stuck with an investment if they don't want to stay in that.
So I'm a jurisdiction and I've got a project. Why would I want to go through this route rather than seek any other type of funding, grant funding, for example, or a concessionary loan?
Because we're using that scheme also to channel funds from the global north to the global south. And so then you back to say, like, how are you going to do this? So today in the voluntary carbon market, it's mostly people do this on a voluntary basis. So firms, just to feel good, will actually buy some credits. And it's just voluntary action also from individuals. This is not going to be enough. Okay. It's not enough today. It's not going to be enough in the future. Mm-hmm. So we need to figure out another way to generate the funds. And our idea is to use a mandate on pension funds to do this. So let me explain this. So first, there's a concept that Patrick Bolton and others have developed of aligning portfolios to the Paris trajectory. So the idea is that when you have a portfolio of assets, it's always a carbon footprint that's attached to this. Mm-hmm. And you want to make sure that the carbon footprint of that portfolio goes down in the same rhythm as what's required to meet the goals of the Paris Agreement. Now, given that the EU is committed to the Paris Agreement, it could actually say, like, look, all of the pension funds should be doing this too, should make sure that the carbon footprint of their portfolios follows that trajectory. They would ask for this. And the way funds can do this is two ways. One is that they can reshuffle their portfolio, sell a little bit of BPs and buy a little bit of Danone. But in our proposal, what they can also do is buy shares in these projects. The shares are going to generate carbon dividends. So it's a proof that they removed carbon from the atmosphere. This is actually going to reduce the carbon footprint of their portfolio. So the idea of doing this for Paris-aligned trajectory is quite easy because we already know how to compute the carbon footprint of asset portfolios. Going forward, we could do the same for biodiversity, right? So we now have emerging, not quite consensus, yes, but there's some emerging ideas on how we compute the biodiversity footprint of a portfolio. And we could also have the same ambition to say to make sure we reduce the biodiversity footprint of that portfolio.
And so it's the pension funds, because they have such a large amount of assets under management, they're the ones that are going to put the momentum behind this.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm in a pension fund and you're coming to me with this, then I am going to be skeptical because I don't know the quality of some of the projects, and that has been the weakness in the voluntary carbon market.
Yes, but it's been exactly those aspects have been those that are easy to fix and that are being fixed, right? So there's, you know, you of course need to put a governance in place, you need to measure these things. Remember here, the idea is that because it's shares, we're going to prudently release these dividends. So the dividends that are being released are things that are, you know, indeed much more likely to be permanent than the credits today. So in that sense, I think the integrity of the system is addressed by design, I would say. So today we could actually already ask the funds to say, well, you know, the EU is committed to the Paris Agreement. You have to do it and do it with the current assets. Here we're giving them an extra option to reduce their carbon footprint. So, you know, you always like to have an extra option, right? If suppose you are subject to some constraints, here's another easy way, maybe a cheaper way to reduce the carbon footprint of your portfolio.
What does it take to make this happen, Estelle? Because it has to happen fairly quickly if it is going to happen.
So you do need a legislative decision, right? You do need to have that mandate. Now, if you think about many pension funds are actually at the leading edge in terms of sustainability. So because they're investing in the long run. And so the political decision here is just to say, look, this is our goal. We should make sure that all of our economic participants and all of our actions are aligned to this. Even in terms of narrative, I think it's much easier. And by the way, another advantage I'd like to emphasize is that when you're asking funds to decarbonize their portfolios, you're not removing any obligations or pressure on the underlying companies, right? So they're still going to be subject to an emission trading scheme, whatever. It's really two different ways to engage and make things rolling.
And do you know which institution might administer the platform and create that?
So, you know, the United Nations is a...
If
we want
credible.
To do that, the Global South and I guess the EU is a natural leader on this. And the UK could actually join in, I think, because they're compatible in terms of objectives. But the United Nations is a natural platform, given that we are engaging also with the Global South, right? It's just to send money to the Global South, which, by the way, was part of the commitment of the Global North countries to the Global South countries in the Paris Agreement.
And I suppose, Estelle, it really does fit with what we're all talking about now, which is building coalitions of the willing, because if you want to participate in this market, you do. And if you don't, you don't.
Exactly. And I think it's really important to engage all stakeholders here, both Global South, Global North, because that's the only way to go forward.
Estelle, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
You'll find more about this in Chapter 8 of the Paris Report, Designing and Scaling Up Nature-Based Markets. And that chapter is by Estelle Cantillon, Eric Lambin, and Beatrice Veda Di Mauro. The full report, Global Action Without Global Governance, Building Coalitions for Climate Transition and Nature Restoration, is also available at cepr.org. They are both free downloads.
Vox Talks Economics is a Talk Normal production. The assistant producer is Megan Bieber, and our editor is Andrei Zagarian. Next time on Vox Talks Economics, is the rise of populism bad news for sustainability?